is John M. Bennett, and you are listening to CITR FM 101.9 in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
It's Tuesday, February 14th, Valentine's Day, to those who celebrate, and an excessively pink Tuesday for those who don't. And you're listening to CITR 101.9's weekly news radio show, Against the Current. CITR is based on UBC's Point Grey campus. We're located on the unceded, ancestral, and traditional territories of the Musqueam people. Every Tuesday at noon, we broadcast our weekly news radio show, Against the Current, where we provide you with timely and relevant coverage on the Lower Mainland. If you happen to miss part of our new show, you can always listen back during our rebroadcast on Saturdays at noon. My name is Stella, I'm part of the News Collective this year, and I'll be your host for today's episode. First off, we'd like to extend a big thank you to all of our donors during Fund Drive. We run this show for you, and we're grateful for every penny you've contributed to help keep your local community radio running. For today's episode, we have four speakers for the upcoming TEDxUBC conference: Daniel Shravani, Aaron Skinner, Prashita Agarwal, and Theodore Yu. We chatted with them about why they wanted to be a part of the conference, the journey that led them there, and what they'll be talking about when they're on stage. Our final segment for today will be an overview of some Black History Month-related events you can attend in the Metro Vancouver area. Now, I'll hand it over to Jasmine, our News Collective lead, to walk us through her conversations with some of TED ex-UBC speakers for the upcoming 2023 conference.
This week, we spoke to several of the speakers for the upcoming TEDxUBC conference. We chatted with them about why they wanted to be part of the conference, the journey that led them there, and what they'll be talking about while they're on stage.
My name is Prishita. I'm a student entrepreneur at UBC. I'm studying finance with a concentration in sustainability and social impact. I recently founded Mosa, which is a local upcycling business.
My name is Theodore Yu, and I am a third-year psychology student here at UBC.
My name is Daniel Shravani. I'm in my fourth year of the pharmacology program here at UBC, and I'm just a guy who's really interested in the intersection between technology and how that can impact us in a really real way in healthcare.
I'm Aaron Skinner. I am a first-year PhD student here in zoology. I'm a conservation biologist in training. My PhD work is in Colombia. I work with birds, trying to understand how alternative, more environmentally friendly approaches to agriculture influence bird survival and movement, which is important to maintain viable populations in fragmented landscapes.
The first thing that we asked our guests today is why they wanted to be a TEDx speaker in the first place.
TEDxUBC was like always in my mind, but I never thought that I had something that I could share about or something so passionate about until like very recently when I started learning more about the sustainability space and taking action in the space. So it was actually in my second year when I started speaking with people in the recycling industry and learning more about glass waste problem. And that's when I started my own startup called Mosa. We are a local Vancouver-based business that upcycle used glass bottles. So this is a very new concept of using like micro factories to upcycle glass locally. And I wanted to share that with like other students and also like encourage them to take their first sustainable step.
It was in December, I believe, end of December, during winter break. My friend sent me an Instagram DM saying, oh, TEDxUBC has an application opening. And he was planning to apply too. So I told him, hey, you apply, I'll apply. That was the plan. And he's like, oh, great. So I'm like, okay, well, he's applying, so I'll apply too. And at the time that I got the message, I was actually just walking down the bus loop to catch the 99 back to downtown or back to Broadway. And because he sent me that message, I do a lot of like vlogging and video creation and content creation like that. So I always have my GoPro in my backpack. Since I have that in my backpack already, so I just took it out, stuck it up in the air, and just talked for 90 seconds about the importance of public transit and how we can change people's implicit bias using psychology methods to help not just bring back ridership from COVID-19 pandemic, but to also increase to welcome new passengers on board the transit system. And that was my pitch to TEDxUBC. And then when I got home, I just typed up the 300-word essay, and then submitted it. And that's how I got in. That's how I actually like got into a TEDxUBC.
I just thought it would be really nice to be able to introduce students and, you know, just community members around UBC to this idea of how do medical records impact the way that we live and how do they impact us in a way that we don't really see. Medical records have been really frequently overlooked as a problem in healthcare. You know, we have so many issues in the medical system, and I think that medical record software is just one of the ones that's overlooked.
Just having a platform like TEDx is pretty incredible. you know, I personally have like watched a lot of TEDx talks and have been really inspired and motivated by some of the content that I've seen there. And so I'm really passionate about conservation work. And there's a growing realization in the conservation community that conservation and social justice are closely linked. And to achieve lasting conservation impacts, this will require co-developing solutions with local communities. And so in this context, I kind of just started thinking about the colonial history of conservation and science. And I thought that was a message that is powerful and important. And I think TEDx is a really great platform to get that message out.
The next thing that we wanted to learn is what sparked their initial interest in the topics that they'll be discussing and what the journey has been like for them that's led them to the TEDx UBC stage.
I think sustainability is something that I was always passionate about, like even growing up. It just like didn't make sense to me for us as a society to be throwing out things that could be used as a material or a resource for something else. So that entire like linear economy model did not make sense. So I took a course in my second year. It's called Shopping, Sustainability and Society. That's when I learned a lot about a circular economy and how in like different industries, how it's used and how the concept of shopping started coming in and fast fashion. So that was like that initial spark. But it was actually one of the parties I threw in my second year when I got connected to Glass Waste. So I was throwing out glass bottles after a party and I heard some of them crack. That's when I was like, I don't know if it's still being recycled when I'm throwing them in the recycling bins. So I started looking more into the issue and found out that a lot of glass bottles don't end up getting recycled, even though glass is 100% recyclable. So that's like what sparked that interest in glass wasted specifically. And I talk more about that like in my TEDx talk as well.
It all started the second I was able to look out the window of my parents' apartment in Hong Kong. The first thing I saw was the mini green bus traveling down the street and stopping at every single block. And it really caught my eye because first is bright green and second is stopping every single block. So it allowed me to catch up the details of that transit vehicle. From that day on, my love for transit expanded to double-decker buses and trains when I was able to get out of the apartment and explore a bit with my parents. Fast forwarding to elementary school, I fell in love with the Silver Seat here in Vancouver of the buses. And then, and well, until they went on to the more economic seats, which are thinner and more fuel efficient. But it took a while for my bum to get used to because back then, the older generation seats are like really comfy. In grade 3, I made paper bus model out of my math homework. And my math teacher asked me to hand in my homework, but it's all folded up into a bus. So I told him that the bus ate my homework. Then he didn't really like that part, but fast forwarding a bit more to high school, I started helping out my friends with public transit and more importantly, like teaching them the importance of fare, how to get on transit planning, and also how to get off the bus. Because people that have never taken public transit before, they always have one common issue, is how does the back door work? So talk to them a little bit about that. And I found out that 80% of my friends in high school have never taken public transit before. And that when it got to me that there's a huge missing education program here in Vancouver about transiting. So when I launched into a university, the first thing I did was starting social media accounts and teaching people about transiting, and more specifically, like, accessibility transiting. There's also teaching them about the rapid bus we've got here in Vancouver, transit museum, and many more.
I've had a bit of a diverse path to getting where I am right now with regards to sort of research. And so I started off in high school doing wet lab research at BC Cancer, and I was sort of going in between a few labs, and it was very fascinating to me trying to uncover some of the more nitpicky issues that we have in science. And this is with regard to genomic therapies for cancer. And that sort of grew into a love for research. And so I kind of went between lab and lab, went between departments, and slowly I found a real passion for the way that tech intersects with healthcare. Now, this really started back when I was super, super young, and I was around, I think, 10 years old. I made a cashier app, and I'd go to every single grocery store that I could find and ask them about how they like their cashier software. And that was when I was really young, and so that didn't really lead to anything. But it was sort of a bit of a hobby for me, where I try to build software around different things. And then as I'd enter into this research world, I could sort of see the parallels between, hey, there is something in this science health field, and there's something in this tech field that I can sort of intersect to create something new. And slowly, I tried to learn more about that, where I started trying to volunteer at some clinics, learn a little bit more about their software, because the first thing that really came to mind was the software that runs behind clinics. And over the past year or so, perhaps a little bit more, I've been lucky enough to work with the Artis Health Clinic. And we're trying to come up with a new osteoarthritis treatment program for rural Indigenous patients in Northern BC. And while doing that paper, it's very interesting to sort of look at how there are disparities in the treatment that individuals receive up north, and how somehow, some way, we're able to use software alongside many other things. Of course, software is just a small piece of this, but a necessary one, and how we can use things that we weren't initially looking at to create a better experience for patients. And oftentimes, very often, software is overlooked. But currently, to kind of summarize, it's just been this idea of, over time, I've gained some experiences in different places, whether that was wet lab research, whether that was with software, and now sort of working with marginalized patients, and to sort of conglomerate that. And that's sort of led to this idea of healthcare tech being at the center, or rather being the epicenter of the treatment that patients receive.
I think trips to Latin America when I was in high school and in college were super important for me. I think I was really blown away by these tropical ecosystems and the biodiversity that I encountered there. So yeah, I'd say that was kind of the main thing. But then at the same time, like interacting with the people in Latin America and interacting with these farmers and trying to kind of reconcile these potentially conflicting ideas, where like agriculture is, you know, one of the leading drivers of biodiversity loss. But then there's these people who are totally great and amazing people who practice agriculture. And so I think that's kind of why I wanted to do something with agriculture and biodiversity and try to think about how we can rethink our agricultural practices to be more environmentally friendly.
All right. Thanks, Jasmine, for getting us familiar with Daniel, Aaron, Prashida, and Theodore. It's been fun learning about why they applied to be speakers and what initially sparked their interest in what they'll be discussing. We'll be taking a short break from here, but when we return, we'll be learning more about what exactly these speakers will be talking about while on the floor and what the preparation process has been like for them.
Do you love being caffeinated? And do you hate that greedy, soulless international conglomerates are succeeding in the cutthroat world of coffee? Sounds like local coffee roasters Trek Coffee is for you.
Trek Coffee is 100% Indigenous and military veteran owned and operated. Let's keep small businesses thriving. Stop by Sunshine Convenience on 4th, the Super Value on Commercial, or Grocery Checkout in the Nest to pick up some Trek Coffee today.
Organize UBC wants to unionize student workers. Are you a research assistant, an academic assistant, or a work learn? For far too long, student workers have endured low wages, no job protection, and poor working conditions. Organize UBC is fighting back, and all they ask is for student workers to sign a card on their website so the union becomes certified. To sign a card and to find out more information, go to organizeubc.cupe.ca.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to CITR 101.9's weekly news radio show, Against the Current. My name is Stella. I'm part of the News Collective, and I'm your host for today's episode. Before the break, we were getting acquainted with a couple of TEDxUBC's upcoming speakers for this year's conference, Aaron, Daniel, Prashida, and Theodore. I'm going to pass the mic back over to Jasmine, who will let us listen in on their conversation about what preparing to be a part of the conference has been like for these speakers and get a preview for their upcoming talks.
Now that we're a little more familiar with who these speakers are and what initially sparked their interest in the topics that they'll be discussing, we wanted to learn a little bit more about what exactly they'll be talking about while they're on stage.
Talk a little bit about my own journey of getting involved in circular economy and sustainability and how I got started. But more importantly, I want to share about the concept of microfactory. I'll go more in depth in my talk, but this concept of microfactory has really helped me start my own business. And I genuinely believe that is the way for us to go forward to create an even bigger impact at a local stage, but also at a global stage in the waste management area. So I highlight upon that, share that concept, and also share with students as to how they can get involved today if they want to join the circular economy ecosystem.
So the specific topic that I'll be discussing is changing people's perception on public transit. That's more having to do with the often misconception of public transit being the lower class travel option. And I want to help people understand that public transit is in fact the future of transportation. We went from using our feet back in the 1800s to horse carriages, and horse carriages to cars, then cars to public transit. But what people, and the only issue there is from feet to horse, horse to cars, those are widely acceptable because those are seen as luxury upgrades. But when public transit was introduced, to this day, most people still have that unconscious bias in their mind that, oh, it's bad that I'm taking transit because it's cheap. And what car companies are now doing is they're trying to sell people electric cars and make them think that is the future of public transportation. But electric cars aren't, because as we are growing in population and with the limited resources that we have, each individual car that are on the road increases transport time, increases the risk of accidents, because not all drivers are that professional trained as bus drivers. And it's just clogging up the road, and everyone gets frustrated about traffic all the time. Not only that, we have unlimited resources, right? People are complaining about inflation, but they also drive. And just by getting cars off the road as much as possible and public transiting, mass gas is being burned. And therefore, cheaper transport fees for goods that we actually need, like your Amazon delivery packages or post office, or even food delivery. Like all those are skyrocketing in prices because of fuel costs. And just by getting cars off the road, there's a lot of fuel saved and reducing the waste of inflation. And a lot of things that people don't want to take transit, the bottom line of it is that there's no education about public transit here, right? And that has to do with the government and transit companies. Transit companies, they can use social media or even advertisement on the back of the buses, educating people the benefits public transit could bring to their lives. And going deeper, as in using media to teach people how to take public transit. By doing that, there's a huge, it can reduce the fear of people taking public transit, therefore increasing the weight of people.
So I'll initially start with going into a little bit of a story, and I'll leave that as a little bit of a cliffhanger for now, about how I saw electronic medical records really blocking access to quality care for some patients I was working with. And from there, I'm going to go into a little bit of a story about how I went into creating a startup, and how I'm taking a bit of a unique approach in developing a medical record system that takes into account the views and the the views and opinions of different stakeholders within the healthcare system. And just sort of going over that story and overall just this new revolution in healthcare and how it's so important for us to really be looking at.
My talk, like the three main points that I'm hoping to get across in my talk, I kind of start discussing how colonial legacies have resulted in the present day economic realities in the global South, which are largely extractive commodity based economies that aren't always sustainable. And then furthermore, how conservation and science have historically been colonial endeavors. And then through a particular project that I am involved with in my PhD, I try to illustrate why it's important to listen to the communities that we work with, respect local ways of knowing, and actually co-develop conservation solutions that meet the needs and desires of these local communities. And then finally, I guess the last main point that I try to bring home is where it's needed and wanted to try to strengthen capacity that will actually stay in country.
And finally, the last thing that we asked them about is what the preparation has been like for them to become a TEDx speaker.
It's been very exciting. This is my first time doing a TEDx talk. So just from like writing that first script, doing rehearsals, it's all very new, but it also has given me time to like reflect back a little bit more and think through my own journey and picking out points that I could like share with others. So it's just been like a really like, reflective process. But I think throughout this process, I've been able to learn more about myself as well as learning more about the impact I'm making.
It's a great experience because you get to work, see behind the scenes of how a TEDx conference works. I've watched a lot of TEDx videos online, and I've always dreamed of, wow, those people are great. Like they have the guts to go up there and speak in front of like hundreds of people and uploading it to a platform, 38 million subscribers. And I didn't know how much work was put behind the scene until I actually like right now be a part of it. It's really well organized because the specific people for different tasks, there's social media, there's professors, there's the 5% of students that are involved in this. But after the acceptance and to the first rehearsal, we had 1 week to prepare a script or to have something to present to them. And it seems doable as in 1 week of preparation, but then you add in your coursework that you have for school, your commute times and other commitments that you have in life. It's a bit tight in time frame. But it is a topic that I love speaking about, so it wasn't hard to get it down on paper. It's just the organization part afterwards that took me a while to get it, to narrow it down. In fact, our next rehearsal is actually tonight. So yeah, they really prep you well for this because there's rehearsals, there's set deadlines that they keep you from procrastinating, which I'm happy about. Because honestly, like when they accepted me in January, like end of January until March, it seems like a big time frame, right? And I'm pretty sure if it wasn't for those deadlines, I would have probably procrastinated. So yeah, the whole process is like three rehearsals, and there's a photo shoot. There's also other emails about like Instagram posting and stuff like that.
Giving a TEDx talk is really fascinating, especially when it's a topic that's near and dear to you. I know a lot of my peers who are also giving talks are discussing topics that they've been interested in or have been involved in for years. And so in the preparation process for this, the TEDx talk, it's required a lot of introspection because, you know, while I try to give the story of how I've personally seen medical records cause detriment in patient lives. It's been really fascinating for me to really sit back and say, okay, what are some of the experiences that I've had that have let me see this new perspective? And then it's like, okay, we'll take that and how could I apply that to the audience? How can I, within, you know, just less than 15 minutes, how can I give the audience the experience of being beside me in that clinic or seeing the fact that patients are suffering because of medical software? How can I give the audience that experience in, you know, a very short amount of time and having not that with them not having lived that? And yeah, it's just been a lot of introspection and a lot of discussion with some of the doctors I'm working with, some of my professors even, to make sure that, you know, I'm a senior undergrad student. I'm not a graduate student right now. I'm not a medical student right now. And so I have to ensure that also all the things that I'm saying are factually accurate and that are representative of the overall medical field, because I don't know where my biases are. I don't know necessarily the things that I don't know. And even in the startup, that's been one thing that's been really fascinating to me and has been really interesting to me to sort of see where my biases are, see where I might not be looking. But especially in this TEDx talk, I want to make sure that I can give everyone an informed experience, but also a very human experience as to why this topic matters to me and why it should matter to, you know, the UBC community and beyond.
Started by watching a lot of TEDx talks. And I don't think I watched enough. I think I kind of had not framed my talk that well for initially, but yeah, so I kind of started coming up with this script that I wanted to convey to the audience, and there have been a couple different practice rounds, or I guess actually the second practice round is tonight. And so, yeah, it's been a lot of time. I mean, I feel like you have to really almost learn your lines as if you were like an actor, to, you know, to really give the most impactful or powerful, get your message across in the most impactful way. And then there's been a lot of like technical stuff that I wasn't really used to thinking about either, like, you know, copyright of images and getting permission from people whose images that I would be using, or yeah, talking to other, you know, people that I've worked with in the past about using their photos or whatever. So I think that's good practice for sure, but something that's not done usually if you're just kind of given a lay presentation to in school or something.
That about wraps it up for today's feature on some of TEDx UBC's upcoming speakers. We'll now be launching into a short break, but don't forget to tune in after to hear about some of the local events you can attend to celebrate Black History Month.
You know what I could go for right now? Authentic flour tortillas pan-fried until golden brown.
Yum!
Or vegan taco kits filled with traditional Mexican chilies and spices.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Or how about vegan potato and chorizo taquitos?
How can I get these foods immediately?
Buy Lita's Mexican Foods.
Sounds delicious. Tell me more.
Lita's Mexican Foods is a female-managed, plant-based Mexican food innovator in BC. Their products come prepackaged and frozen at tons of local grocery stores around Metro Vancouver. Not to mention they can be cooked in under 10 minutes.
Wow, that sounds perfect for me. I've been so busy lately and dinner takes so long to make. Where can I get my hands on some Lita's Mexican Foods?
Lots of places. Whole Foods, Choices, Stong's, Vegan Supply, Donald's, and even UBC Bookstore. Hey, where are you going?
To buy some Lita's Mexican Foods. See you later.
See ya.
Standing there, I'll get a house. TransCare BC works to enhance the coordination of trans health services across the province and offer expanded health services to support transgender communities. They are doing this by developing gender-affirming client-centered models of service, ensuring access to gender-affirming and supportive healthcare that is equitable and available, and supporting network development to make sure trans and gender-diverse individuals, their families, and healthcare providers have access to information, resources, and support. Check out phsa.ca to learn more about this program and lend your voice to help create an inclusive and supportive system for trans members of our community.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya,
Anthasia, Talitin, Homasqueam, Mustail. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to CITR 101.9's weekly news radio show, Against the Current. My name is Stella, I'm part of the News Collective, and I'm your host for today's episode. For our final segment today, we'll be going over events you can go to during the last few weeks in honor of Black History Month. Jasmine, over to you.
Okay, so the first event that we wanted to mention will happen in a couple days, and it's called the Black Rave, which is hosted by VMF After Dark and Afroqueer via VR. This event is an ode to Black underground dance culture and music, and it'll take place this Friday on February 17th from 9:30 to 2:30 a.m. And you can register on Eventbrite. The tickets start at $14.28. And it'll be held at the Bentall Center Gallery, which is a vacant commercial space which will be reimagined as a pop-up nightclub and art space. And this is across the street from the Burrard SkyTrain station in downtown Vancouver. If you happen to be more of a poetry person, you can attend Period, which is a Black Queer Poetry Slam co-presented by the Vancouver Winter Pride Festival and the VMF Winter Arts. This will take place this upcoming Thursday, next Thursday, on February 23rd and starting at 4 p.m. This is a free event that'll take place from 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. next Thursday. And it'll be on 850 West Georgia Street at the Vancouver Art Gallery North Plaza. If you're in for a movie, you can head over to the VIF Center, which has been screening a couple Black History Month themed films throughout the month and will continue to do so until the end of the month. Their Black History Month programming this year includes two series, Icons and Dispatches. Icons spotlights the accomplishments of American movie stars like Denzel Washington, Viola Davis, Angela Bassett, Chadwick Boseman, among others. Dispatches, on the other hand, focuses on documentaries, ideas, and social justice, including work by and about James Baldwin, Cami Billups, and two exceptional recent Canadian films, Dear Jackie and Our Dance of Revolution. If you're in the mood for a concert, you can head over to the Chan Center from February 25th from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., where they'll be presenting a concert called Black Futures, which is an exhilarating exploration into Black futures through the visionary work of revolutionary artists such as Saul Williams, Moore Mother, and Irreversible Entanglements. And finally, if you just want to watch Lemonade, if you want to go and appreciate some Beyoncé, you can go head over to the Cinematheque on February 27th at 7 p.m. and watch it with the rest of the Beehive.
And that wraps it up for today's episode, folks. If you weren't able to catch all of today's episode, check our website page later this week for the podcast or tune in Saturday at noon for our rebroadcast. This is Stella from CITR Weekly News Radio Show, Against the Current. And I'll see you next week.
This is Ira Glass of This American Life. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I have no idea what that means. Somebody just asked me to say this.
CITR 101.9 FM, and it's Valentine's Day, and we